This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. Good afternoon. It's great to have you with us for the Monday edition of the Noon Business Hour as we begin another week. I'm Cisco Cotto. Some clouds lingering in Chicagoland. Lots of sunshine right now, though, and it will be this way throughout the day with more and more clouds and then pockets of sunshine. Temperatures getting into the mid-60s this afternoon in some of the western suburbs, but hovering cooler, maybe about 50 degrees along Chicago's lakefront. Tomorrow, more of the same, a little cooler, but we'll get this mix of sun and clouds. Right now, it is 55 at O'Hare, also 55 at Midway, and along Chicago's lakefront, it is 45 degrees. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco stocks are narrowly mixed, with the Dow down by 3 points to 24,460. NASDAQ up a fraction of a point, S&P higher by 3 points. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index down 0.25%. A reading from the Chicago Fed today shows economic growth slowing. Of the 85 industries tracked, 44 made positive contributions. As for sales of existing homes, they rose more than expected, up 1.1%. Economists were looking for a gain of just 0.2% month to month. Senior trade officials from the U.S., Canada, and Mexico are meeting again in Washington in a renewed push to reach a NAFTA agreement over the next few weeks. Talks will pick up tomorrow. Back to you, Cisco.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, we'll get a look at the week ahead, including some news on tech stocks that are getting ready to report earnings. What might that say about the wider economy? Jan Rogers Niffin joins us to talk Sears, as it may be about to sell its Kenmore brand. And oil prices are certainly rising, up near $70 a barrel. Will it last? And if it does, what kind of an impact might that have on the economy? Also, Stock Picker Monday, an investing pro, will join us to give you some advice for your portfolio. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
There's an offer to buy the Kenmore brand and some other assets from troubled retailer Sears. And the offer is coming from the company's current CEO. We'll get some analysis on that in our next segment. Meanwhile, a couple of key reports are out today, including one from the Chicago Fed. Also, the week ahead will feature the latest looks at home prices and the gross domestic product. We're joined to talk about it now by Michael Gregory, head of U.S. economics at BMO Harris Bank here in Chicago. Michael, let's begin by talking about home sales, specifically existing home sales. What are we seeing here in the March numbers?
Well, it turned out a little bit stronger than expected, up solid at 1%. The consensus call was looking for something much less than that, and we do know that the housing market kind of nationally kind of cooled off a little bit towards the end of last year, beginning of this year, and it looks like, you know, things are starting to pick up again, and we're seeing that across many indicators so far for March.
Is there a concern when it comes to whether it's existing home sales or new home sales, refinance activity, that interest rates going up on mortgages might have an impact and maybe slow down that sector of the economy?
Well, that's a very good point, because now we have seen not only interest rates starting to drift up, and that probably will continue modestly, but we've all seen prices move up. So affordability has been eroded. Still remains historically attractive, But it has eroded from sort of the most attractive levels of affordability, and particularly for first-time home buyers, that's a little bit more of a constraint. So, yes, housing is probably going to cool a little bit. And the other issue, too, is that when you look at sort of homes available for sale, you know, we're down at near or just around very low levels. We had record low levels of inventories to end last year. So, you know, even if you want a house, there's not a lot out there. So I do think that housing is more to provide sort of a grinding support for the economy. We're definitely not in a boom mode.
Let's talk about this Chicago Fed report. Just give us a sort of brief thumbnail analysis as the Fed provides some measurements of the economy in March. That's the Fed here in Chicago.
Oh, that's absolutely. And what they do, this is a reading on the national economy, and they look at a whole dozens and dozens and dozens of economic indicators and takes a look, you know, what they tell us about growth in the economy. And what they suggested this morning, what was that the economy continued to expand. The number was positive. And when the number is positive out of the Chicago Fed's National Activity Index, it means the economy is growing slightly above its potential pace. Now, we had very strong growth in February and a little continued growth in March, but not as robust. But the key thing is the economy is growing. We're getting consistent positive readings out of the Chicago Fed metric.
And when we get these readings, even if it is a little bit slower, is there anything to be concerned about in that? Or is it inevitable the economy is not going to keep growing at the same level each and every month?
Oh, absolutely. And what you tend to get is when you get an outsized increase 1 month, you're going to get a little bit softer the next month. You see that in particularly a lot of the volatile series, like new home sales, which we get out tomorrow. You know, we've had a few months of negatives. Chances are that we'll get a bit of a payback for that and get a positive reading for March.
We get manufacturing numbers that are looking good. Talk about that and also maybe inflation worries that might be a part of the equation, too.
Well, I mean, we're getting durable goods orders on Thursday, and I mean, it'll be very healthy, very strong number. And that's one of the parts of the economy, if you like, it's the silver lining. We have seen up to this point pretty solid growth in business investment. If anything, that's going to pick up a little bit more incented from tax cuts. And, you know, part of that is our aircraft. Boeing had one of its best Marches in terms of new orders in more than 27 years. But we're seeing it across the board throughout the economy. So business investment is pretty solid, and I think that bodes very well for increasing capacity a little bit and perhaps denting a little bit of some of the inflation pressures, which inevitably are going to continue to pick up here going forward.
Great insight. Michael Gregory, head of U.S. economics at BMO Harris Bank here in Chicago. Coming up, the majority owner of Sears wants to buy Kenmore.
Discussing your dollars, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Sears CEO and majority owner Eddie Lampert is offering to buy Kenmore and some of the struggling retailer's other assets. Let's talk about the development with Jan Rogers Niffen, CEO of J. Rogers Niffen Worldwide, based in New York. Jan, so Ed Lampert wants to buy Kenmore. What do you make of this?
Well, Cisco, this is another case where Sears sells an asset, takes the money, puts it in the fireplace, and sends it up the flue. We've watched this game for 10 years now since they started selling off assets. Remember, they sold Ala Moana Mall in Hawaii for $300 million if you count the other nine that were thrown in with it. And that $300 million went right back into business, in a business that has negative operating cash flow every year. And every time they sell something, they just put it in the fireplace and send it up the flue. And this is no different. If they sell this off, they'll get asset value back in dollars, but they won't put it out to the shareholders and they won't correct their problems. They'll just burn it in the operations. And this just continues until someday there's nothing left to burn. You finally run out of furniture in your house, you know?
So why is it going like this? I mean, why not some sort of a turnaround or why not just close up altogether?
Well, it has been a very gradual liquidation when you think about it. And I don't know where Eddie actually stands financially on the whole transaction because it's all been so complicated, of course. And ESL has owned various pieces of it, and they own the debt. And so when it all finally goes down, as they continue to extract value over time, he may come out okay. But this company is going away as a regular operating retailer. It may still have an online presence. It may have some small store base. But this thing is going down from having been the largest at one point in time operator of retail stores in the country until it's going to be simply non-existent from the point of view of the consumer. And it's becoming less relevant every day. I mean, hey, Cisco, when's the last time you were in a Sears store?
Yeah, not quite as often, I'm sure, as they would like. And part of that's because they're all closing in my neighborhood. I mean, that's something a lot of people are dealing with is just fewer and fewer Sears stores.
And, you know, they're all tied to malls, and we know the malls are struggling. And so, you know, they've sold the stores in the good malls, and the stores they've got left are just not very strong. They're not in very strong locations. They're not worth very much in liquidation. That's why they're selling things like Craftsman's Tools and Kenmore and brands that mean something still to the consumer. But even those brands mean less. So the value of the brands deteriorates over time. I think about this thing all the time as a melting ice cube. It had some great stores. They've all been sold off. It had some great brands. They're gradually selling those off. They do have an online presence, but it's not a very strong business. It doesn't compete really successfully with Target, Walmart, or Amazon. So there's really nothing left for them to do here but gradually wind it down and try to get out in the best shape they can get out.
Interesting. And what might it say about the wider retail that now there's a chance that Kenmore and some of these other brands could end up being sold on Amazon or in Walmart or Target or some of these other retailers if the assets are sold off?
Yeah, we saw that already start with Craftsman, right? And so the problem is the brands don't mean as much anymore. Does Home Depot really need Kenmore? Does Lowe's really need Kenmore? No, they've already developed whatever brands they're going to sell, and they're already winning the game with the customer. So even the value of the brand has been deteriorating.
And when it comes to some of those things, when it comes to the brands and the appliances, and have we reached a point, it sounds like what you're saying here, we've reached a point where Sears just doesn't matter anymore, even as a brand name overall. The name Sears doesn't really matter.
I think Sears, the brand name, may actually have negative value. I think Craftsman, of course, still has great value. I think Kenmore is a meaningful brand, and somebody else could sell it. But I think, just like when Lands' End was inside of the Sears store, I think that the Sears brand was doing more damage to Lands' End than Lands' End was doing good for Sears. I think the same story is with Craftsman and Kenmore now. Sears hurts those brands more than it helps them.
Jan Rogers Niffin, CEO of J. Rogers Niffin Worldwide. Up next, an update on the markets from Bloomberg. WBBM News Time 12:25. A look at the markets from Bloomberg, sponsored by the Danny Did Foundation. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, not a whole lot of movement today. The Dow is up 2 points, NASDAQ down 4, and the S&P higher by 2. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is little changed, down almost 0.33%, and not a lot going on for crude oil futures. They are lower by about 0.1% at $68.34 a barrel. For a check of the grains markets, we turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We've had steady corn all day, up 1 to 2 at the moment. December up 1.5 at 404. Beans have been down as much as 11 after being up a small amount early. We are down 8.5 in July at 10.31¾. November down 6.25 at 10.28¾. And wheat's down 0.5 at 4.76¾ after being up 6 to down 5. Corn higher, beans and wheat lower. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55. Live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
There's concern a suburban mall's scanning of customer license plates could cross privacy lines. And Prince William and the former Kate Middleton, the Duchess of Cambridge, welcome a baby boy to the royal family. On Wall Street, the Dow is flat. The NASDAQ is down 3. The S&P is up 2 points. Oil today is flat. Some clouds in Chicagoland, but seeing the sunshine as well as we head to a high in the mid-60s in some of the western suburbs, a high around 50 along the lakefront. Right now, 57 at O'Hare and Midway, 47 degrees downtown. The noon business hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Stocks are mixed at this hour. Not much activity, though, on Wall Street throughout the day. Let's find out what's going on. Michael Palumbo joining us, Chief Portfolio Officer at TMT Perseverance Fund, also author of the book Calculated Risk, based here in Chicago. Mike, no big swings today, just sort of little swings all around the flat line.
Yeah, good afternoon, Cisco. Thanks for having me on. It's been a pretty slow session today, as there hasn't been many. We're right in the middle of earnings season, but it's right today there hasn't been much announced.
And so do you imagine that the movements in the markets either way over the next couple of weeks are going to be earnings-based?
Yeah, this is the time of year where you get a lot of volatility in individual names. Now, indices may not move as much, but individual names are going to be moving 5, 10, 15% based on their earnings numbers. A lot of them are out, but what we're waiting on still are some of the tech names.
Yeah, those tech names, we'll get some of them this week. Do you anticipate good news in the tech sector overall?
Well, you know, the trend has been positive in these names as far as their numbers. The question, though, is you get some headwinds on some other fronts like regulations. So, you know, you have Facebook that where Zuckerberg was in front of Congress the other day for a couple of days getting grilled. There's a lot of headwinds that are starting to develop that may not show up in earnings yet, but they will down the road.
And is that why it's more important than ever? I mean, I'm sure this is your advice all the time, but that you really look at the fundamentals of a stock before deciding when to get in and when to get out.
Certainly, fundamentals are important. It's right now, though. I think what's important with the tech names is trying to figure out how bad these headwinds are going to be in Europe and the United States and actually everywhere in the world where regulations are starting to come on board that protects consumers for data use. So, you know, right now Facebook faces, you know, the problem is when you're running a company, the one thing you don't want to be is you don't want to be on regulators' radar, right? And that's what's happened, unfortunately, to Facebook. It's going to happen to some of these other big tech names too, because they basically have monopolies on information on your data. You got Google, you got Facebook, you got Apple. Those three names control basically almost all of people's data that's out there online. And so now governments are starting to crack down on how that data is used, because data right now is very, very valuable. Data on people's transactions, on what they like, what they dislike, that those things are being bought by companies, by advertisers, and that now governments are starting to notice that this could be an issue, because a lot of people don't want their data out there being sold, and they want control of their own data. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Europe is going to be, I think, the hardest headwind, because they have a regulation that's about to start on May 25th. It's called the General Data Protection Regulation, and it is going to be very hard on companies that have have a lot of customer data. Basically, what the regulation does is it allows Europeans to know what data is that companies have on them, and gives them the right to have it deleted. Now, that's a big step. No other economic region has done something like this. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. That starts May 25th. There's a lot of companies in the tech world that are pulling out of Europe just because of this regulation.
In a market like this, where we've had some volatility after not having it for a while, is it tougher for people to be investors and even traders, as, you know, one day the stock that you want to sell is way low, one day it's really high, and from one day to the next, you don't necessarily have that consistency of stock price?
Well, we at TMT Perseverance Fund, we always have a longer-term perspective, so a daily move is not going to affect a whole lot on how we view a company. I really caution investors to not get caught up in a daily move in a stock. Now, obviously, if there's terrible news and the stock drops 20%, that matters. But, you know, the 5% here back and forth, that's just a lot of just noise. And you should really be looking for longer term moves in a stock. So, in fact, you know, if you see a stock that goes down that you like, it actually might be a great time to just buy some more of it. You know, it depends on how your conviction on the stock. So sometimes when stocks move one direction, it's actually an opportunity to go the other way on that. So if the stock moves up, you have a chance to sell it. Look at it that way, as opposed to worrying about these small moves and maybe they go against you. But it's really just noise a lot of times.
We're going to get some earnings this week from the Detroit automakers. Do we expect them to be doing well or still struggling, especially at Ford?
Well, the numbers in the auto sector, they've not been great, but they've generally they've been better than expected. So now GM and Ford haven't had great years this year, but GM last year was my pick of the year, and it was up a large amount, much more than the overall market. I did not recommend it this year, and that's because of the run-up it had last year. They definitely still have a lot of things going against them in that, you know, people are not buying cars as new cars, especially as often as they used to. The market has changed because of technology. So, you know, when things like Uber and other technological advances have kind of caused, especially millennials, to put off buying autos because they don't. If you live in a city, you don't necessarily need to own an automobile anymore. That's not like the old days. So they definitely have some headwinds. I would stay away from the autos right now. I think they've just run up too much in last year, and this year they have been struggling. And I do consider, you know, I think they will continue to struggle this year.
Michael Palumbo, Chief Portfolio Officer at TMT Perseverance Fund. Thanks for joining us. Up next, a look at what's ahead for gas prices. WBBM News Time, 1240. Prices of oil and gas are on the rise. Let's find out what's fueling the increase. Phil Flynn is joining us, Senior Market Analyst at the Price Group, also a Fox News business contributor. Phil, oil basically flat today, but it has been going up. It's now in the $68 range. What's going on here?
You know, I think part of it is really strong global demand, Cisco. You know, a few years ago, just a year ago, everybody thought, oh my gosh, we have a glut of oil. Prices are going to stay low forever. Well, something funny happens when prices get low. It creates demand. You know, the same way you light a match to a gallon of gasoline, that's what happens when prices get low to demand, and demand has exploded against the backdrop of OPEC cutting production. And before you know it, the glut is gone, and we have a very tight oil market, probably the tightest we've seen in over a decade.
And so is this expected to continue here, or do you anticipate anything changing with supply?
You know, I think right now supplies are going to continue to tighten. You know, I think a lot of people were sold a bill of goods when it came to the shale oil revolution. You know, they mistakenly were told that, you know, the increases in U.S. production at a record high would replace traditional oil projects that were canceled in other places of the globe. And what we're finding out, much to our chagrin, that that isn't true. You know, despite the fact that the U.S. producer is raising production, they're not raising it fast enough to make up for where production is falling in other places in the globe. And that's going to leave our market tight probably for years to come.
And so are they not doing that, not increasing production at a higher rate because they can't? They just can't get it out fast enough? Or is that because of the prices that were struggling for a while, trying to get those up?
I think it's a combination of both. You know, on one hand, when the prices were down, a lot of these firms, you know, ran up a lot of debt, so it was hard to get money to do these projects. They laid off a lot of their workers. It was hard to convince them to get back. And now that they've raised production, you know, they didn't spend the investment on pipelines and infrastructure. So even if you produce more, you might not be able to get it to market. So it's a whole combination of factors, but those are the main ones that really have, you know, undersold what the shale oil producer has been able to do.
Have the increase in prices helped some of the struggling companies in various areas of the energy sector, or does it have to be higher for a longer period of time for them to really rebound?
I definitely think that this run-up in price has helped. And the good news about this run-up, Cisco, is unlike the past when the U.S. was totally dependent on importing most of their oil, you know, a run-up in this price really would have dealt a death knell to the U.S. economy. But now, because we're one of the major producers and exporters, that sort of offsets the blow. Doesn't make you feel any better when you fill up your gas at the gas tank. But the good news is that even though we're seeing the price of oil rise, it probably won't kill the economic recovery that we have going on right now.
Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst at the Price Group, based here in Chicago. Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. And still to come, our Monday Stock Picker.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday here on the Noon Business Hour. Helping us out this afternoon, Adam Sarhan, founder and CEO at 50parkinvestments.com and findleadingstocks.com, based in New York. Adam, thanks for being with us. What's your first pick?
The first one is Micron, ticker symbol MU. It's a very strong tech stock. We're all familiar with it. Demand for their chips has been surging over the last 18 to 24 months. The stock has done extremely well. They've already reported earnings, which to me is a very, very big, you know, big deal as we are in the heart of earnings season. And the stock is very well positioned to continue to rally from here. Most importantly, from a valuation standpoint, the P.E. ratio is only 7.75, so it's well below the S&P, well below the other tech stocks, and it's extremely undervalued, in my humble opinion.
Well, right now it's at $49.16 a share. Where do you see Micron going?
Just back to its old highs would be a very nice rally from here, if not higher. But in the next 12 to 18 months, assuming, you know, barring some unforeseen event, probably in the mid to high 60s.
And the ticker symbol is MU. What's your second pick?
The second one is Square. We're all familiar with that. It's an online processing payment. They help stores, businesses, process payments. And it's the founder is Jack Dorsey, the founder of Twitter. This stock is extremely powerful. It's a leading stock, as well as they're a leader in their industry. In other words, most of these big tech stocks are going after consumers. Apple Pay, you know, all that fun stuff. They want to enable consumers to pay over their phone or whatever the case is. What Square's doing is they're targeting businesses, and they're allowing businesses to process those payments. And that is a very, very strong niche. The demand for mobile payments is growing substantially, and they're very well positioned to continue to grow.
And the fact that they're going at businesses and that's their target, does that make it tougher for some of these other services to compete?
Correct. Absolutely. And also the fact that they're the first, you know, they have a name brand to go after businesses and bridge that gap between traditional, you know, in-store POS sales, a point of sales. In other words, when you go to the store and you swipe your card, that's one transaction. The other one is online. And typically merchants have been using two separate processing tools to process those payments. Square is really the leader in the space where they bridge that gap and they combine everything into one easy-to-use intuitive platform.
So Square right now, $50.77 a share. Where do you see it going?
If it just goes up 20% from here, you'd be into $60, and it probably can go much higher than that. I mean, the stock over the last 12 months has appreciated substantially. And leadership, you know, when you look at competition and the barrier entry, it's very difficult for other companies to compete effectively with Square. So in the next 12 to 18 months, if not longer, probably a good 25 to 30% higher from where it is right now.
Adam Sarhan, founder and CEO, 50parkinvestments.com and findleadingstocks.com. His two picks today, Micron, ticker symbol MU, and Square, ticker symbol SQ. Past programs, later today, a podcast of this hour on our brand new website, WBBMNewsRadio.com, and also on the all-new Radio.com app. We'll get a check of the markets from Bloomberg next. WBBM News Time, 12:55. We're wrapping up the noon business hour with a check of the markets from Bloomberg, sponsored by Baird. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, the Dow is higher now by 8 points. We're at 24,471. NASDAQ gaining just a fraction of a point. S&P higher by 4. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is sliding 0.25%. You had to have a big budget to find and buy a home last month. The National Association of Realtors says overall sales of existing homes climbed 1%, led by a 15% jump in sales of properties worth $750,000. Or more. Now, sales of more affordable $100,000 to $250,000 homes, they fell 8% because so few were on the market. Hasbro says it expects Target and Walmart to expand their toy departments and replace some of the massive amounts of shelf space the toy industry is losing to the Toys R Us liquidation. And investors seem to expect that too. Hasbro shares are rising more than 3%, and Mattel right now gaining more than 4%. Sponsored by Hiscox Small Business Insurance, with business at 25 and 55. Live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.